Dear Shooter, what happens when you take a North Carolina boy and drop him in Wyoming to shoot the Night Force ELR? Today we talked to Brian Hunter to see what it was like.
It's not about protecting the stupid, it's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. And it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe and you are not sacred and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I don't want to know.
I look like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTac, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
Well, good morning, and we got Brian Hunter on the line. We brought him out here a couple weeks ago to shoot the Night Force ELR match.
We do. He is used to shooting those East Coast things, and we introduced him to a whole new world.
Brian, we got you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, what was it like? I mean, you came out here and experienced this thing that we call wind.
It was a ass-kicking experience, but had a great time out there. Learned a lot.
Well, and I mean, in all fairness, this wasn't like the long shots you're not accustomed to. You shoot long quite often.
Yep, that's correct. Different format, NRL style matches is new to me. I've done a lot of team stuff here in the Carolinas and the East Coast, but big wind and NRL is all a whole new world for Brian here.
So, all right, so let me back you up a little bit. You said that the format was a little bit different. What's different about the format?
Target style. A lot of that is very different. We typically shoot IPSCs and targets like that. So anytime you bring in more of animal targets and things like that, you know, it changes the ball game a little bit. You know, some of your up and down and windage and everything on those type of targets can be a little bit more difficult.
Oh, come on. You love
where you want to.
You totally love the kangaroos.
Oh, man. The kangaroos were awesome. Some of the turkeys kind of kicked my butt.
That's always a hard stage.
Let's be honest, Sasquatch kicked your butt.
Yes, Sasquatch definitely kicked my butt.
That's one of my favorite stages.
Saturday in a hole was a butt-kicking day. You know, Sunday was awesome. Did a lot better Sunday. But Saturday was a learning experience. So, once I kind of started figuring those winds out and things like that, you know, things settled down a whole lot Sunday.
Well, I mean, as you prepared to step into a new world, how did you get ready? What was your process?
Time on the range, you know, trying to run the rifle, get it broke in, trying to build data. Here at home, I had access to about 1,900 yards. But here in Charleston, South Carolina, we have so much humidity and no wind. So, the environmentals of everything is just completely different. It is really hard to train for that type of match when you're here on the East Coast. You know, a 5-mile-per-hour wind here is a big wind.
Well, yeah, that's like nothing here.
Yeah, you got a lot of air in your hair. So when you got here, because I know when you got here, you turned around, the first thing you did was like re-zero your rifle and check your data and everything. What was the change in your zero?
Wasn't a whole lot of change in the zero. We did do some changing of optics and stuff when we got here, so we did re-zero everything and start from scratch. But with the Lucid Optics TH optic, you know, we ran out to a 600-yard zero and all the way out past a mile in about 12 shots. So, you know, the environmentals there sped up. My velocity sped up maybe 10 feet per second, which is a little surprising being our air is so thick. I mean, we're at 90% humidity today here. So once getting out there, I really expected to probably get more up to about 20 feet per second, but it kind of just stayed at 10. And, you know, so well, the environmentals were a big change.
When you're shooting that 300 PRC, I mean, that's in what grain bullet are you shooting out of that?
We were running Hornaday 225 ELDMs, okay. Running about 2850 feet per second. Right. Man, that round hits hard. That is a fantastic round.
Oh, it does. That's exactly what I shoot. And I think I get a little bit higher velocity. I'm running right at 29. And I think that's probably because I've got a 29-inch barrel on it.
Yeah, I'm running long. A 26-inch barrel. So you're definitely getting a little bit added velocity for those few inches.
But yeah.
The inches.
Yeah, that same bullet, that 225 ELD, I mean, it hits like a hammer, even way out there.
You know, I've had great success with the ELDM products from Hornaday. You know, we've ran those pretty exclusively over the last 5 or 6 years. Kind of jumped over to Bercher when things got hard to find for a little bit. But, man, the VCs and everything of those bullets are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, as you look at just straight-up cartridge selection, after you've shot the match now, what would you change coming back?
That's kind of a tough one. You know, it really depends. I have a few other big cartridges available that would be interesting to play with out there. You know, like a 375. That would be, you know, what win. But that is also a monster cartridge for that style of match. You know, some of the stages.
Yeah, you'd have to shoot 160 rounds in 2 days?
Yeah, yeah.
What is 375 running around right now? Last time I looked at it, it was like $14.
No, reloading. I'm just getting into the reloading side of the 375, so all that's going to be a little bit new. I still got to develop a load for this rifle. But theoretically, $6-$7 a round hand loading, which is not that bad for a 400-grain projectile with 3,000 feet per second.
Fair enough.
No, but still, ooh, yikes.
Yeah, times the your ground count for the match, and you have an investment into this.
Oh, I mean, we're all invested. I mean, this long-range shooting, if you're not invested, you're in the wrong ballgame.
This is probably true.
It is true. But, you know, it keeps you off a crack.
You can't afford it.
Yeah, I mean, a good heroin habit would have probably been cheaper, but that's okay.
Just ask Hunter Biden.
Yeah, no kidding. So the rig you ran, that was Accurate Mag's rifle?
Yes, so that was the Accurate Mag AMSR. That is a quick style change barrel system. Very unique proprietary system. Something they've been kind of working on over the last few years, and that rifle shot phenomenally. The accuracy of it was really well for a 17-pound 300 PRC. You know, a little snappy, but, man, you know, I think at 1,000 yards on a cold bore, we ended up putting up a 2.63-inch spread. So that is not bad for over-the-counter ammunition.
No, that's actually really, really good. I did watch you have a couple malfunctions. Were they bolt-driven, operator-driven? What were they?
So there were a couple different things I had. I had some feeding issues. You know, that's a very long round to get fed in from a magazine like that. So it takes a little tweaking sometimes. So got that squared away. Then I also, you know, I mentioned that gun was a little bit snappy. And in the process of putting over 200 rounds through it prior to the match, it, you know, started to rattle some things loose here or there. And the rear bolt cap came untorqued, which kind of led me to a dead trigger on the stage. So we were able to pull it down and figure out what was going on with that, get everything retorqued, and then that kind of solidified any other issues that I was having. So took a little bit to figure out what was going on with it, but like anything, we tore it down, got it fixed up, and got back to the game.
So, Brian, to get into the light class, what did you have to weigh?
You would have to weigh 16 pounds.
Okay, so you weighed 17. So why don't you take that snappy rifle of yours and actually put some weight on it? If you're going to be heavy, dude.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. You know, we were kind of hoping to cut into live class, but unfortunately, you know, without removing a muzzle device and bipods and things like that to weigh in, we just weren't going to get there. So, you know, we took the half a pound over we were, and just ran with it with the big boys. And, you know, that's sometimes the best way to do it. You know, you really put yourself up against some of the better competition that way.
Yeah. How much of a hindrance do you think that was, running a half a pound over lightweight into a heavy class and getting to run against those guys that have the 25 and 30 pound rifle?
You know, it's a big thing. Watching trace, watching follow-up shots, you know, luckily at the distances we were shooting, typically I could get back on my glass and spot my impact. So, you know, that was the positive side to it, being that, you know, you're shooting out to sometimes 21, 2200 yards. So you, being prone, you can jump back on it and get it. But, you know, when you're shooting a smaller cartridge, short action cartridge, you know, typically you can watch that thing leave the barrel, watch it all the way to the target. You know, that's a huge benefit when you can watch that trace and see what it is
doing. Well, let's just say my gun is heavier than your gun, and I don't jump. I can watch my shot.
Oh, absolutely. I got 6.5 Creedmoors that weigh 10 more pounds than that rifle.
Silly boy.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to go big and go home.
So you came out to an environment where you had never shot in our environmentals, and you entered into a competition with a lightweight rifle when in, you didn't need to. Other than cartridge right now, it's the only thing I can see that actually you're following suit and doing standard operation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you only live once, so why not go ahead and throw yourself right to the fire and just see how it plays out?
Fair enough. I mean, you kind of have masochistic tendencies. You like to handicap yourself just a little bit.
Yeah, one day, you know, I'm going to figure out how to do this thing right. And, you know, I'm actually going to have everything, you know, tuned in and ready to ride and be in the right class and all that, you know. But for coming out and having the experience that I got to, it really puts a forefront to thinking about next year and, you know, what my goals are going to be there and, you know, what do I want to run. So, you know, there's a lot of options there. It's just kind of picking it and playing with it to figure out how to better my opportunity next year.
Now, right. You do realize that you had probably the most beautiful weather that Night Force ELR has ever had. So next year, it could be snowing and blowing. We're going to have tornadoes and bears flying. You never know.
I mean, that's the good thing about Wyoming. You know, I think even when I was there, this, like you said, the best weather England's ever had, but I still think I experienced three seasons in one day. You know, went from cold to rain to sweating your ass off and back to chilly at night.
Hell, that happened during lunch last year.
Well, they did order fog on the second day, just like they always do.
Well, this time of year, you got to have a little bit of fog. So, you know, it gave opportunity for somebody to go and twist some turrets on some rifles. So that was very nice.
Wait, what? Did that happen?
That happened.
Oh, my gosh. So do you think it was folks on your stage or stages ahead of you? Or how do you think that happened?
We really have no idea. I don't think it would have been anybody in my squad. The guys that I was squatted up with were some pretty awesome local guys, some guys from they were from Denning, from the instructor sniper school. We had a couple former third group guys. So, I mean, some very up-and-up guys there. And it seems to be all those guys and myself were the rifles that got tweaked with. During the fog time.
Let me say this out there for the listeners. Dear shooter, you go to a competition match and you turn somebody else's turrets without their knowledge, you may catch a beating.
If we would have caught them, it wouldn't have been good. You know, that was the first stage of the day, and everybody kind of had their data set up, ready to go. First team went up to shoot, and he took his first round. It went through the sky, and he looked up and was dialed out to 15 mils.
Ouch.
So for an 800 yard shot. So it was not good. Luckily he caught it, made the correction, come off the line, and he just kind of happened to say, hey, that was kind of odd. You know, I dialed my optic before I came up, and it was up to 15. And we all kind of walked back and looked at our equipment, and everyone that did not have a turret, I guess, indicator, something like the Mark V has that lets you know what rotation you were on, everybody didn't have that, had a couple revs put into their elevation.
Yikes. That's just dirty. Luckily,
it is. And luckily, nobody messed with any of the windage on anything. They just dialed elevation.
Yeah, the windage would be, that'd be horrific.
There were, yeah, that would be a rough one to figure out. There were, I believe, 5 or 6 rifles that were tweaked with during that fog delay. You know, I've been doing this for about 6 years, you know, and you always hear the joke of, oh, man, go over and twist some turrets. Never seen it happen at a match. That was the first.
Had it happen once.
Very, very poor sportsmanlike.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. Yeah, and at the end of the day, you're only really competing with yourself. It's like golf in that regard. It's just a dick move.
It really is. You know, it's something that I would have never have expected to see at an event like that. You know, there's always going to be a poor piece of trash person that's going to an event doing crap. But for the most part, you know, all of us, we all invest our time, money, and effort into this sport. And, you know, like my squad, we had a guy, his trigger went down. Another guy pulled a trigger out of his bag. We poured a rifle down right there in the field and swapped the trigger out. You know,
he had a random trigger hanging out in his bag.
he had a brand new trigger tech he was carrying in his bag. Said he was used to triggers failing, so he always carries a spare.
That's good planning, right there.
That's good planning. I've never lost a trigger like that to have to carry a spare. But you know, that gentleman was very glad he did because it got him back up and shooting and saved his day. But you know, that's the type of sportsmanship and camaraderie that I am used to.
That's pretty indicative of that match. I mean, when I heard about the whole turret incident, it was like, really, at that one? Because every time I've shot that match, I think I've shot it 3 times now, and everybody that I've ever run into there has just been top-notch.
Yeah, you know, and that's for the industry as a whole, I think. You know, West Coast, East Coast, middle of the country. You know, everywhere that I've been, and I've been in this community around those folks, they're typically top-notch folks.
What advice would you go ahead and throw out there to new shooters that are looking at maybe trying their hand at this thing?
So, definitely a quality rifle, quality ammunition. You know, there were guys that were doing extremely well with short action cartridges like 6.5 Creedmoor. Very impressed. It's a hell of a handicap, but I mean, you could really go shoot that match with any cartridge if you wanted to. The biggest thing with anything long range is good data and good glass. You know, if you got an accurate rifle, good ammunition, good data, good glass, you know, you're set up. Everything else is just going to be time and transitioning targets and finding some of those targets. You know, some of them, depending on the time of day you were shooting, you know, if they were sitting back in the shadows, they could be very tough to pick up.
Well, you had one that was really hard to pick up because it got more of a dirt bath than anything else. That wolf on the ridgeline. Even folks with great glass trying to spot for that couldn't find it.
I could not see that target. I sent a round where I thought it was, but, you know, one of the squad shooting or one of the shooters before me shot it and kicked some dust up and it silhouetted itself. As soon as the dust was gone, the target was gone. You couldn't pick it up, couldn't see it. So, you know, you try to remember exactly where that thing is at and send a round. I came up short on that part of that stage. You know, it whooped me. You know, so that's like anything. You know, there are certain times of day on certain angles where targets really just pop at you. And there's time of day where you may really have to push through the shade to try to look at a target. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out for you.
Mm-hmm. I think I've had that in just about every match I've shot.
Well, the light changes. The way the light hits the target changes. And as an RO, you can't set it for all the light conditions.
No. And well, and we were shooting a match, and it was the first stage of the second day, and just the way the sun was, you could not see the targets. I watched three squads take goose eggs on that stage because nobody could find the target.
Yikes. That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a stage like that in the past, looking dead into the sun. ROs tried to walk me to the target. I never fired a round because I can't shoot what I can't see. And, you know, I'm not big on indiscriminately just sending rounds downrange, not knowing exactly what's behind where I'm shooting at. So, you know, sometimes that's just luck of the draw of when you get a certain stage and what time of day it is. You know, that's just part of the game we play.
I want to touch on that for a minute, but first, let me pay some bills, and we'll come right back.
The 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company, based in Vail, Colorado, high up in the Rocky Mountains. 10th Mountain is a tribute company to the legendary 10th Mountain Division, maker of fine spirits, including bourbon, rye, and vodka, as well as being a generous supporter of the shooting sports and veterans charities. Support those that support us, and to make it easier, 10th Mountain is offering our listeners a discount. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 10% off. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
All right, so we were talking about, you know, not shooting indiscriminately. You're not going to take a shot at a target that you can't see. And Brandy and I ran into that last year, and it was the first stage of the second day. Why is it always the first stage of the second day? But we had a squad that same thing that you had. We had kind of a fog delay. We had driving rain coming in. You couldn't see the targets. The ROs couldn't see the targets. So we were just kind of hanging out waiting. And there was a squad behind us that decided they didn't want to wait. So they just jumped in and started shooting. And the ROs going, guys, I can't call your shots because I can't see it.
You know, I just feel weird. You know, granted, Wyoming's big country. You got a lot of room out there to roam. South Carolina out here, you don't. And sending indiscriminate rounds down range is just not something that tickles my fancy. You know, one, ammunition costs. Two, safety. I mean, if I can't see what's down range, I can't see the target, how do I know it's a safe shot?
Well, here's safety for you. So we were at a different one. It was in Nebraska. And you shot a plate that you could see. And then you dialed so many out to shoot a plate you couldn't see. And I kind of skipped that stage because you can't see. And these things are held on people's ranches. What if they missed cow? Don't want to take down any wildlife. But literally, you could not see. It was around the bend. You could not see it. But you were to dial, so your bullet hit it.
That just, you know, that doesn't work for me in a lot of ways. Everything we are taught about in the hunting and shooting sports world is know your target and what's behind it. And if I can't see that, that's a problem. You know, we've shot through some loopholes and shot into some blacked out sniper hides and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you see the sniper hide, you see the hole to shoot into, you know, so it's a lot different. You still can't see the target inside the hide, but, indiscriminately taking shots that you just can't see the targets. I'm not about that.
Well, forget about the safety part of it. I look at it as if the RO can't see the target, you're not going to get a score on that. So what's the point?
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, it's like we and Jason were discussing the wolf that I could not find earlier. I sat there for probably 10 seconds just looking through the glass, and it was like, do I even send a round at this, because I have no idea where steel is even sitting at.
Yeah, I would save the round. I'd rather, you know, I'm going to get a zero anyway. I might as well save the ammo.
Right. Yeah, you're looking at a 1% chance of getting lucky enough to connect with that round. I mean, you know, especially out there with those environmentals and the wind and everything else, you know.
So what was the hardest stage for you? What was the one that really gave you the most trouble?
For some reason, on day one, the mover just between the wind and the holdover on it, I just bombed that stage. I mean, it was, I don't know what I was thinking. I was leading incorrectly. That one just really, really got me. I would have loved to have had that stage back, and another shot at that stage, but you know, that's how it goes sometimes.
So the mover, there was lots of folks talking to the ROs about the movers, and there were some folks that would engage the target just past the limit marker.
Yep.
And you know, the ROs, you know, were not giving those credits for impacts. And to the credit of the ROs and the match directors, they upheld the rules. An inch past the limit is an inch past the limit. It's past the limit, you're out of bounds.
Correct.
But there's a lot of folks kind of upset about that because they were leading their shot, waited too long, and engaged a target after there's a right and left limit on how that thing rolls.
I mean, you know, the limit lines that they had put up were very clear. I mean, you couldn't miss them. So, you know, I kind of side with the match director and ROs on that. You know, that stake is there. It's very visible. And if you break your shot and it's on the other side of that stake, I mean, sorry about your luck.
Right, right. Movers are hard enough anyway at distance. Putting the right and left limit on it that invites you to mess it up, that's just gaming.
Well, I think they put the right and left limiter on it just because if you got too far beyond those limits, you would hit their actual...
Yeah, you break the mechanism.
Yeah, we can't have that either. Yep.
Now, from what I understand...
It's something,
go ahead.
It's something that kind of puts you under a little bit of added stress there is the reset delay on that mover was pretty long. So, you know, start getting under your skin when you're just sitting there waiting for that thing to turn around and start moving again, because, you know, you're on a 2-minute time clock and time goes fast when you're sitting there waiting on that thing to reset and go again.
Now, I did, if I understand this correctly, they did let you shoot the mover moving both directions.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
When we shot this last year, you could only shoot it when it was moving, I think it was right to left.
Oh, wow.
So if it was going left to right, you couldn't take a shot. You had to wait till it reset.
That wait time.
And talk about making you skinny on time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get one really solid pass at that thing, and if you don't get it, you're out of luck.
Now, I think they gave us a little more time. I think they gave us more time. I think we had like 4 minutes on that. Because of that, but the fact that you could only shoot it going one direction, that messed with me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Heck yeah.
You know, it's one thing that I'm definitely intrigued by now is the team format that they do there. You know, having two guys on the line, having another guy beside you on glass, you know, working with your wind calls and stuff, man, that's a huge thing versus being an individual shooter up there. So, you know, that is definitely something that I might be looking at next year is moving more to the team side of things where you got a spotter. You can actually work the wind calls with each other.
So in the team format, you're able to communicate back and forth.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then do you share points, or how does that work?
You share points. How that basically works is shooter one shoots at target one, hit or miss, and then shooter two shoots at that same target, hit or miss, and then they move to the next target. They are also working on a 4-minute stage time, so you double the time of the individual shooter. You know, granted that everybody has that same advantage there of having your secondary person being able to spot win for you, but you know, points wise, it should be a huge difference when you got a guy call corrections.
It should be. You're right.
See, and I'm looking at this as from a different perspective. I've seen a lot of guys are going to the team side of this, which is leaving the open heavy getting kind of thin. So I'm like, I'm going to keep shooting open heavy.
Staying open heavy.
Because I have less competition.
Light class. I mean, light class was a pretty light class.
There's 40 shooters in light?
Yes, yeah, something like that. And out of 340 shooters at the event, so... I mean, if you can get in light class, man, you've definitely upped your odds a little bit.
No, I tried this. I tried this match with a light rifle once. I'll never do it again.
Oh, I tried it too.
So part of Jason's paying dues back in the day is he came to me and he said, I don't have a gun that'll, you know, handle this match. And so I went to the safe and I pulled out my 7 mag and handed it to him. So this one will handle it. Now, it's a 7-pound mountain rifle. It's a hunting chassis for sure. And by, what, stage 3 or 4, you had developed a flinch that you kind of still have?
By the end of the first day, for sure. I was about midway through the first day, I went and found a pad.
Dope was on, though.
Dope was good. But, wow.
You know, that was one thing. My dope was great. Really, the only thing I ever really fought with was some windage. My dad and dope was there.
Well, and those guys are kind of devious. The way they set those targets in those coolies and those draws, you can get 3 or 4 different wind profiles before you hit the target.
They had one stage that they ranged improperly on purpose.
There was actually 2 stages that we found that the targets were actually incorrect target distances. Both stages, they were up to about 100 yards off on the given distances. So, that was a little bit tough. We had some guys with some $15,000 rangefinders on our squad that were double checking distances. And when you start seeing 100 yards compared to what they gave you on paper to what you're actually ranging, and, you know, two side-by-side rangefinders ranging the same distance, it's off. But that's going to happen sometimes. You know, it was good to have some guys there and that were willing to share a little bit of information like that too.
Well, in the match brief, the match director was very upfront about they did their best, what they thought they could do, and if you had questions, mill it.
Yeah. What's the target size?
They gave you that. In your match cards.
Because we didn't have that last year.
They didn't give us target size. They told you what it was, like a square or a T-Rex or whatever it was. But
they didn't tell you size?
We had no target sizes.
Oh. See, I thought so that'd be one piece of information they had to give you.
Well, yeah, if they're telling you have to mill it, then you have to know that target size.
Yeah. If you have an LRF, you were okay. You can range them out. So, you know, just kind of one of those things. I walked up the shot and ended up looking at the actual match card and that they had stapled up at the stake, and the yardages were definitely different than what I was giving as a shooter. So I had to go back and reconfigure all my data before I shot. Luckily, I caught that because nobody had ever said that, hey, we changed the distances to all these targets.
One of the nice things about this match is they give you have quite a bit of information up front, and as you reach the stage, especially with that many shooters at this event, you usually have some time before you have to shoot. So you're not pressured to, oh my God, this date is different. I gotta reconfigure everything, and I have 30 seconds to get it done. You usually have 5 or 10 minutes before you're shooting.
Yes, and I mean, man, for 340 shooters, the stage flow just went fantastic. I do think they dropped a mover on the second part of the course that they had to remove the stage. So that caused a little bit of bottleneck on one stage because you ended up with 2 squads starting there. But, right. Outside of that, for 340 shooters, it just moved remarkably well. So, you know, kudos to all the ROs and, you know, the match directors and everything, because that's no easy. I've seen matches with 140 guys and you wait 2 hours to shoot a stage.
Wow. Yikes. I've never been to one like that.
It happens. It definitely happens. I've had delays from guys shooting power lines down, all kinds of craziness. So, you know, seeing that they had things worked out that way was pretty awesome. I mean, there was no complaints on how the actual match ran for that many people. That's a heck of a feat to accomplish there.
Well, and I will say, and I'll throw this out, that Peter and Tad, they do a good match.
They do.
They've been doing this for a long time. They've got it right.
Oh, absolutely. You know, those guys, I think they took a little bit of a beating. Practice score kind of crapped out, which is neither of their faults. You know, they had their whole system set up and everything you could ask for, but, you know, it's computer glitch. So they took a lot of heat for that. It took 3 or 4 days to kind of somewhat figure out the scoring on it, and still may not really be too true. But, you know, that's the only real complaint that I have seen that was in any way, shape, or form legitimate in any way. And that was something that was out of their hands. I mean, you know, they can't control practice school.
Right. Did they have any kind of backup method of scoring?
They did. We had paper cards. Every RO wrote your score on it, signed off on it for each stage. They never asked for those cards. So pretty much whatever information that they may have had in practice score is kind of what you ended up getting. So I didn't even go back and look at my score because I didn't shoot well enough to place high enough to be overly concerned about arguing over a couple of points. You know, so I just kind of let that go. I haven't even looked to see where it said I even finished at. I know it was screwed up, but, you know, more important things out there in the world, you know?
Well, and in that vein, I mean, you came out with some interested parties watching you do this. And did any of them really give you a hassle of a hard time on performance?
No, I had quite had a few of the sponsors call and be like, "Hey, man, how did you only have 6 points on day one?" You know, so and you have to explain, "Hey, man, practice score went down and it's a mess." And they kind of went on the Facebook group and read up a little bit on what was going on there, and they were like, "Oh yeah, you know, there were some issues."
Well, I would offer before anybody attempts to criticize anybody that shoots this match, put some skin in the game and get some education. Come shoot it yourself first. It's not easy. Even with practice score glitches, this, that, the other. It's not an easy match.
It is not. It is probably one of the more challenging ELR kind of course of fires that is available in the country. You know, this match is unique for a reason.
Well,
nobody else is doing this.
No, and we've said this multiple times about this particular match. People don't come out to shoot this to win it. They come out to survive it. It's bragging rights.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you're sitting there and you have guys from Australia, and, you know, dudes that come in from all over the world to shoot this match, you know, that really says something about what Peter and Tad have put together there, that you're bringing international shooters in to, you know, Casper, Wyoming, to shoot a match.
Yeah, you got to hand it to him for that. And that's one of the fun things about this match is getting to meet a lot of these people from other countries, from other parts of the world. You see a lot of military guys there, active military. You said you had a couple of guys from Benning, from sniper school, that were shooting the match. I mean, again, it goes back to the caliber of people that shoot this match and the people that you get to meet at this match. That's the best part of it.
I tell you, some of the best friendships and relationships that I have made have came from the industry of shooting. You know, it's just a fantastic group of people for the most part. You know, there's always going to be a knucklehead or two, but, you know, you couldn't ask for better people than people from the industry.
No.
You know, I've been very fortunate to build some very great relationships.
So, yeah, so except for the knucklehead that went and turned your turrets.
He'll get his eventually.
Oh, yeah.
But that's fair. You didn't really meet him, so, you know.
I don't think he quite understood the caliber of folks that were sitting in my squad there. If he would have got caught, that would have been a bad day for him. But, you know, his time will come.
That's right.
That's the way it is. You know, karma's a bitch.
You know, it still just blows my mind. You know, I couldn't imagine thinking that I've shot bad enough that I need to go mess with somebody else's equipment to try to better my odds.
Right, right. And if you're in on the flip side of that, if you're if you're that close in the running to win that you feel like that's what you got to do, I mean, do you really deserve that win?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, and honesty and integrity are to the forefront, you know, and if you don't have that, then you just need to go back home.
Right. Yep. You know, I mean, come on. I thought we learned this lesson with Tonya Harding.
You know, win or lose, do it with dignity. You know?
Right.
That was back in the day when athletes took a knee.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a really good knee, too.
Oh, that's horrible. We're kind of coming up on time here. Brian, I appreciate you coming on and coming out here and actually shooting this thing. It really does. Yes, we talk about this. It's a lot of fun, but it does take a little bit of fortitude to come out and shoot this match. It is not an easy match.
It's definitely not, you know, and it definitely kicked my hind in. But you know, that's a motivator, you know, we regroup and, start working towards next year with new plans. I know what I'm getting into now, what I need to prepare for. I just need to wait for a hurricane here in South Carolina so I can go out and practice.
We'll order one up. I think that your season's about to start, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just started. There was a little tropical depression that blew through this weekend. But, you know, it's that time of year, so hopefully we'll get us a good couple storms. I can go out there and try to shoot in that 60-mile-per-hour Wyoming wind here in South Carolina.
Yeah, we call it Tuesday. You guys name it.
Yeah, we give it some woman's name because it just tears everything up, you know?
Crazy.
We love you, Brandy.
Yeah, wait till you come out next year, buddy.
Yeah, oh, yeah, she'll weather witch this thing. She's going to order up the winter storm warning. Yeah, it's going to be great. Thanks.
That's all right, man. I love making snow angels with snowballs. So just don't eat the yellow snow, though. That's one thing they tell us here in South Carolina.
So apparently he's never been in snow with wind because there's no snow angels happening there. You drift in.
Yeah, that's about how that happens, well, too.
Yeah, we don't see snow around here.
No, you're too far south.
But, man, I tell you, I want to thank, you know, Deer Shooter, Lucid Optics, Accurate Mag Products, 10th Mountain Whiskey and Bourbon, you know, all the folks that came together to really help put this event on and have me out there, man. The hospitality was amazing, and, you know, I couldn't have done it without everybody being there and putting the best foot forward to do this.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I'm excited to see you out here next year. I'm planning on clearing my calendar so I get to shoot this thing next year.
Yeah, I would, you know, we were kind of talking not too long ago. It might be interesting to try to put some team format together somehow and, maybe get, you know, two groups of us or something out there and see how that goes.
I'm in.
I like it. I like it. Maybe we can get, Brandy and Jason out there and kind of do a Lucid team and a Deer Shooter team, and might be kind of fun.
I think we ought to put a squad together.
Yeah.
I like it, and I stand behind it. I think that would be a great time.
I'm up for it. So until next week, you guys just keep blaming your gun.